Welcome to the Nelson Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are diving into your running back rundown here I just primarily want to focus starters, backups here, just kind of thinking about these things, and there's been some changing stuff. So let's just sort of get a grasp on that and, again, talk about the importance of some of these things, right, we've seen in prior years. Guys that were free agents right now. And again, I'm recording this like late in the afternoon. It's like 5 o'clock Eastern time on Monday. And I just keep coming back to, I'm like, here we go. Like, this is the most predictable thing. I'm like, Keontae Ingram's going to be a difference maker down the stretch, right? Like, you cut Eno Benjamin, Darrell Williams is on IR. He's comes from fourth to second. If there's a Connor injury, there's a spot start in December. This is it, right? Like, this is like one of the more, it happens every year type of things. And like, here we are, right? So it's really important, I think, to sort of optimize these things. So I went through and I scrubbed up all of your running back, tracking matrix, or your HHG tracker. So you can go ahead and check that out on the site. But I did want to sort of run down some of the stuff and give you some specific data where I got it. So Zeke and Pollard, I still think that Pollard's a backup. There's a really interesting quote here that happened from the running backs coach a couple of weeks ago that I thought was super illuminating in terms of how we should think about players and a lot of the stuff that, you know, we think that coaches are stupid, right? Or a lot of the criticism of them is, hey, you did something dumb or whatever. Where in reality, like, I'm sitting home and I know, like, less than 2% about a player's life, right? It's just a super low percentage of their time in a given year that I see or I know that much about in terms of what's on television and, you know, with reported practices and that sort of stuff. Like, it's a really low percentage of stuff. And so I keep coming back to this, right? So I always sort of start with that as a prior. If you're doing something that doesn't make sense to me, there's probably a rational reason for it. People typically act rationally. It's not to say that they don't make mistakes, but it is to say that, frankly, it's if they're making a rational decision, if they're making a decision, that it probably has a reason, even if it's maybe, you know, it can be wrong, but it probably has some basis in reality, right? These people aren't just, except for one team, don't just have a quarterback that's plucked out of nowhere or a coach that's plucked out of nowhere, right? In terms of 31 other teams have some resumes behind them in terms of our head coaches. So trust them a bit, right, to make some rational decisions. So I kept coming back to this one where it's Jerry Jones saying all this stuff about how Zeke's still the starter and yada, yada, yada. And everyone's saying, oh, it should be Pollard. Like, they're stupid to keep going back to Zeke and all this stuff. And it's Coach Skip Pete, who's the Cowboys running back coach, said that Pollard averaged 29.5 offensive snaps per game this season, and that's about where they'd like to keep him. This is last week. This is after last week. And he says, I think that's probably his max as far as total play count, because then the juice isn't the same and he's not as quick, not as fast. When he had that long run on third and one, as soon as he got to the sideline, he said, Coach, I'm done. I'm done for the game. Done. I got no more. And he's referring to the 54-yard touchdown that Pollard ran to put the Cowboys up 49-29, where he was working as the lead back in replacement of Zeke Elliott. His 15 touches were just three short of his career high. And he says, quote, this is, I think, interesting. Some guys are race cars. Some guys are high-quality, expensive sedans. Those sedans can go forever and for a long time at a very high rate, where race cars go very fast and quick, and then they run out of gas. I've always just felt that at that position, you got to always have two guys that are quality backs that can help each other, bounce off each other, and it helps if their running styles are a bit different. I think that's a super illuminating aspect of the Pollard thing, right? So Jerry Jones has been defiantly pro-Zeke. I think that that's probably the reason why. It's not that Jerry Jones is stupid. It's that Jerry Jones knows stuff that we don't know, which is they don't think that he can handle a consistent long-term starting job, which, frankly, he hasn't ever done. So it's not an unreasonable assumption to draw from them. Right, so I do think Zeke's going to come back. I do think Zeke's, you know, I think Pollard, if you're going to give touches places, you're probably better off to give him to Pollard than Zeke. But I do think Zeke is still has potential here to be, you know, some innings. Are his days of like top 12 seasonal finishes done? Maybe, probably, especially if Pollard's going to be involved. But I do think that this is a spot where I don't think he's dead. Right, I do not think he's to totally write him off. I do want to sort of go through this really quick, though. This was my intention was to do kind of a not abbreviated show, but kind of just streamlined stuff. But I started with Dallas, and I got all good Dallas stuff. So I swear this is going to move faster than the other two shows today did. So I went and I found Pollard's market comp. So I use SpoTrack, and they have basically age, contract status, statistical production through a player's career, and they can give you some comps like we would in terms of fantasy comps. They have comps, and what they're solving for is contract value. And so the average contract for Tony Pollard's four comps was 3 years, basically 15.4 million dollars over this 3 years. And Pollard, of course, will be a free agent in the offseason. You look at the comps, I thought it's an interesting subset. Nyheim Hines, Austin Eckler, Chase Edmonds, JD McKissick. So a little variety there. I think the fantasy community would put Pollard much more towards the Eckler side than maybe the McKissick side, I guess, would be probably the lowest side of that, especially in terms of numbers. If you just look at Hines, Eckler, and Edmonds, right, that would bump it up to just about $6 million a year, maybe even a little bit more than that. The McKissick comp really drags his numbers down by about $1 million. So you start looking at that, and you're like, all right, like that's a lot to afford. However, fast forward a little bit here, and you look at Zeke's contract, right? He'll be 28 next year. It will be his age 28 season. He is due a base contract of almost $11 million. He has a cap figure of $16.7 million, which projects to represent about 7.2% of the cap. 11.9 million of that is actually dead cap, so they can't get it back. However, almost $5 million, so $4.9 million of that is cap savings. So they could cut him and save that against the cap. And coincidentally, the number for Pollard in terms of SpoTrack's projection is just about that, which I found super interesting if you were to sort of start projecting out what they're going to have to pay running backs here over the next year, what decisions they might make would be, right? So I do think Zeke has a cuttable contract. I think it'd be a big cut. But if he's not going to sort of step up at the end of the season, saving that $5 million that you could potentially then spend on a guy like Pollard if you want to, or at another position, as opposed to paying Zeke $17 million next year, I think that there's some plausibility to that potential. So I'm super interested to see how that situation sort of goes over here over the next, we'll call it 6 months or so. All right, now we can move a little bit. We're going to move a little bit quicker, I swear. Dalvin Cook, clear starter. Alexander Mattison, clear injury away guy. It doesn't get particularly more complicated than that. Next up is Detroit. DeAndre Swift is... starter's probably the wrong word, considering that Jamal Williams, I think it's either 8 out of his last 9 or 9 out of his last 10 games that they've played together, Jamal Williams has out carried DeAndre Swift. Jamal Williams is like as sure a bet as anyone in the league to have double digit carries. I actually looked at this just for today's show. Jamal Williams is tied for Second in rushing touchdowns. He has 9 in 9 games, basically averaging a touchdown per game, which is exactly what he's averaging receiving wise. So he has 9 catches, so a touchdown and a reception per game. Running back 17, 14.3 points per game. Feels like found money, honestly. Like, that wasn't what we expected coming in. He's an every week running back 2 type starter, right? And if you're playing him in your flex every week, you're feeling pretty good. Like, that's a pretty sound bet. And so running backs entering the week with 8 games of double-digit carries: Jamal Williams, Damian Pierce, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, and Nick Chubb. About as projectable volume as you will get. And Jamal Williams is just basically right there, right? We kind of know what he is. It's a really good bet on volume and a touchdown a game average, and right in the midst of your running back 2 type lineup decisions. Not particularly complicated. DeAndre Swift is interesting. He's running less routes than Justin Jackson. Was notable. He ran 9 routes in this game. Justin Jackson ran 10. Swift actually played more plays than him with 19. Justin Jackson had 17. 6 carries for Swift, 4 for Justin Jackson. So full-blown committee on that side of the, what I would consider the non-Williams side of the position. Notably, Williams still playing less than 50% of snaps, but gets a ton of workload when he's on the field. So not super concerned about that. That's been a pretty consistent trend. He's basically been between 25 and 50% of snaps in every game, except I believe one last year that he's played in Detroit. So it's very predictable in terms of what's going to happen with Jamal Williams, and not a ton of concern there. I was looking at this, and I don't know if it's going to change, but wide receivers in the range of DeAndre Swift: T. Higgins, Amon-Ra St. Brown, DK Metcalf, and then it's Swift. And then Garrett Wilson, Adams, Debo, and London. I went Swift to London. I think I got a plus in there, too. I think it was last week. I'm pretty interested in making a pivot, particularly from the perspective of some roster construction stuff. If you can use Swift to shore up your roster construction at wide receiver and then just dip back into playing injury away guys, it's a really good probably bet on value and roster construction. And you just say, all right, if Swift's not going to be playing 60%+ of snaps, I have some pause about how much his ceiling is going to be. He's basically not been a full-time back since he had that 35 carry game last year. I think it was 30 or 35 carries, something like that last year. So he hasn't really been a full-time starter since then. And it makes you wonder what his reaction to that, again, stuff that we don't know behind the scenes, makes you wonder what his reaction and what his, what the team's reaction to that was. If you look from that time, he's never really been the guy since then. So that's the part of the concern that I have, and I'm interested in making a pivot from DeAndre Swift. He's running back 9 and keep trade cut. That feels rich for me, given where his usage is. I understand he's probably injured, but I understand that that's still a little bit rich for me at this point. Aaron Jones is the lead back. Added to A.J. Dillon. They ran the ball. They ran the hell out of it this week and ran it really well. So it's a pretty clear, it's pretty clear about the structure of that team and their offense. It's Jones and it's Dillon is basically a flex type play. For Denver, Gordon over Murray this past week, 43-25 in terms of snaps, 27 routes on 49 dropbacks for Gordon, 6 targets for Gordon to 3 for Murray. Edmonds only played 15 snaps, so it looks Gordon, Murray, Edmonds is kind of the order of things at present. The Jets are off. It's Michael Carter ahead of James Robinson. That's pretty clear for me. The Saints played pretty poorly this week. Didn't play a ton of plays. I don't think it's a huge mystery here. It's Alvin Kamara, and then it's Mark Ingram, and then it's a combination of Dwayne Washington and Jordan Howard. I think it'd be Washington ahead of Howard is basically how we've seen it. That's how I'm treating it. But we'll watch for, I think if Ingram comes back, Washington's a cut. Right, so when that happens, but it looks like it could be a few more weeks here that Ingram's out. But if Ingram comes back, you can cut Washington, would sort of be my play. All right, the Rams, full-on fiasco. Kyren Williams coming back. Daryl Henderson and Cam Akers splitting time. It's a mess. I'm just sort of staying away, and I've moved it from high priority to low priority. The Patriots, it's Ramondre Stevenson. He's being backed up by Damian Harris. And then you've got Pierre Strong and the Kevin Harris's of the world and Ty Montgomery if he comes back off of IR. Cleveland, pretty clear. Nick Chubb. And then it is Kareem Hunt, the injury away guy. We actually saw some Dearness Johnson creeping up there. Jerome Ford's coming back as well. So that one is clearer, I guess, in terms of the straight backup running back, which is Hunt. But Hunt's been not as usable as he's been in prior years in like a flex type play. So just sort of keep that in mind there. Buffalo, pretty clear. It's Devin Singletary. It's James Cook. I almost said Delvin Cook. And then Nyheim Hines is basically the third guy in the backfield. Don't really trust his workload at present. Washington, it feels like it's Gibson ahead of Brian Robinson at this moment, but it's Monday Night Football. We'll have to watch. I'm moving that to a medium priority right now because I just don't know. I think both guys are probably, you know, both guys are going to be rostered from a dynasty at player perspective. I'm not sure that Brian Robinson's going to find a ton of our lineups at present, even if Gibson were to go down. Seattle, Walker's been pretty good down week this week, but got some receiving work to keep him relevant there. Travis Homer's the injury away guy. DJ Dallas behind him there. I think that's a pretty clear packing order. Tampa Bay, Leonard Fournette was injured, and it was Rashad White taking over for him this week. To start, basically, it's a kind of a confusing thing. White started, and then Leonard Fournette got the work, and then Fournette got injured, and then White looked really good. Vaughn played as well. So I think the news, I guess, is that Fournette should be healthy and back to play once they return from their bye. They have a week 11 bye, so he should be good to go in week 12 is what the look is. So we'll have to see how White plays and all that. But White with fresh legs down the stretch would be really interesting. We've seen that work in some other spots. Remember Penny came all the way back, had the fresh legs. We've seen other guys too, like CJ Anderson, who seemed like he was vastly out of shape when he did that. But we've seen that fresh legs thing make a difference down the stretch. So we'll watch for that. Arizona, the big news this week with James Conner back, scored a couple touchdowns. Kante Ingram, though, vaults up to be the injury away guy. They cut Eno Benjamin. Darrell Williams is on IR. So we'll have to watch for a corresponding roster move and sort of see the scope of that. But, yeah, it's a really interesting one there. I think Keontae Ingram is probably going to be a guy we really want to add in waivers this week because I keep coming back to the idea of who's going to finish as like running back 3 in week 17. And it kind of has a feel of a guy that, you know, and we've seen that before where guys come totally off the radar as recently as, you know, as like week 14, right? But you think of right now, history would suggest that someone that's not really front of mind makes a difference there. So we have to keep optimizing. Keontae Ingram would be one of those archetype stories of which he makes a difference down the stretch. Like that is something we have seen before. So I'm not saying that he's destined for it or anything, but I wouldn't write him off just because he was running back 3 right now or 4 even like a week ago. Travis Etienne, he's on his way to being like a top 5 running back, if not higher than that, in the offseason. Had a down week this week, but still, you know, finds some double-digit points and on relatively low usage too. So hope for better days ahead there. Jamichael Hasty is the injury away guy. I think he'd split time with Snoop Connor. However, I think that Hasty is the clear injury away guy. I have it as a low priority. Might be unfair. I'll have to think about that a little bit more. Maybe I'll update it. But I don't think Jamichael Hasty is going to totally. I don't think he's going to take over in a really high volume job. We haven't really seen that from him in his career. So that's a bit of my pause and skepticism on that one. Baltimore, like this could change by the minute. I have Kenyon Drake as the primary starter right now. Edwards is a backup. I think if Edwards came back, like he might get a first crack. I don't know. Kenyon Drake's playing really well. They've got Dobbins, TBD. Justice Hill is there as well. So I think if I'll just use this as a test of like who would I feel most comfortable starting in a given week. at present, it would be Kenyon Drake. And so I'll put Kenyon Drake as the primary starter. I don't think there's any mystery about who the primary starter is in Miami. It is Jeff Wilson. So he goes from kind of being buried in San Francisco to being running back one in that same, virtually that same offense in Miami. He has replaced Raheem Mostert. So I think it's a really good opportunity for Wilson. Like, you could see top 12, top 15 type play from Wilson here on out. It wouldn't shock me one bit. And Mostert, pretty good injury away guy. Again, talk about guys that came on down the stretch in a season, Mostert being one of those guys a couple years ago. Josh Jacobs, clear lead back for Vegas. He's getting the receiving work too, which is really nice. Bolden's Amir White, Amir Abdullah, kind of his backups. I don't have a great sense of how that would split. I think it'd be a split, would probably be how I would think about it. I think Zamir White's the primary guy because he's got the, you know, he's young, right? He's the guy that could potentially be a starter, where I don't think the other guys have that in their range of outcomes. David Montgomery, clear starter in Chicago, with the caveat of he's given up a little bit of work to Khalil Herbert, but Khalil Herbert was injured this past weekend. I haven't seen an actual actual analysis of Herbert's hip yet. So, that's still something we're watching for. And I haven't, and again, I'm researching it just now, and I haven't seen a full update. I would say we'll probably have a better idea by the time I record the waiver wire show tomorrow about what Herbert's deal is. Hopefully, if he is injured, we will see maybe Tristan Ebner being the backup guy behind Montgomery. It probably frees up Montgomery to have a little bit more volume, and makes Ebner an injury away guy. Again, another three going to two this week. Again, you think going forward, what could that be? Is then two go to one in a critical situation? That's a spot start down the stretch. It's not out of the realm of possible. Mixon still up there in terms of expectation. He's being backed up by Piran, pretty clear there. Sanders is a clear starter for Philly. Again, they play on Monday night. Gainwell and Scott. It's Gainwell is more the receiving option. Scott the running option. That feels like a muddled mess if one of those guys gets hurt. Let's see, Tennessee here, you got Derrick Henry. He's been better this year as well, so that's good. And then Hilliard's feels like the injury away guy. Haskins is doing some work returning kicks as well, so that's good to see. I think it's Hilliard ahead of Haskins right now as the backup running back, but I could see a split if there was an injury to Henry. All right, next up, it's Austin Eckler for the Chargers. It is pretty clearly becoming Isaiah Spiller's backup job, with Sony Michel being the third. Kelly's on IR. I think it's a medium priority one there. I think it would be a bit of a split, and I don't think it would have the same Eckler concentration if it was Spiller. The big news, I keep saying the big news of the week, probably the biggest news of the week. I don't know. It's tough to say it's big news when you weren't really that productive as it was. Isaiah Pacheco takes over starting running back, clearly ahead of McKinnon. It's basically they're splitting the receiving work, with Pacheco basically dominating the running work. It's almost like, if you were to think about it, kind of how we talk about Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt on a weekly basis. It's basically that split in the receiving game, with Pacheco dominating even more than Chubb does in the run game share. Again, he's not the same runner that Chubb is, but I'm using it as an example of the dispersion of the work there. Clyde Edwards-Helaire played 4 snaps, didn't get to see a touch. That's bad. So I'm interested in sort of the, I guess I'm interested in what a buy low looks like for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, if he's out there for a third, I think I'm interested. Would be, I think, one of the price points that I'd pay attention for. But otherwise, I don't feel super great about that right now, to be totally honest. Being benched right now, when you're on a rookie deal, not great for the former first round pick in the former 101 in rookie drafts. All right, next up, we have the Indianapolis Colts, who amazingly took Jonathan Taylor after Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Jonathan Taylor, big game this week, probably his best game of the season, one of the best couple of games of the season, I guess. Deion Jackson's the injury away guy, I think. Jordan Wilkins played minimally. By the way, Taylor totally consolidated this role with 27 out of 30 routes as well, or he ran routes on 27 out of 30 dropbacks, so really, really useful there in terms of his passing game role. propping up some of his running role as well. So that's good there. Deion Jackson, I think, could be a difference maker here down the stretch if something were to happen to Taylor. Najee Harris, 20 carries, 99 yards. One of his better performances of the season, kind of getting right. There was some talk during the week that Jaylen Warren was going to come take over his job. Mike Tomlin basically got in a truck, ran Najee Harris over with said truck, and then parked it directly on top of Najee Harris's chest in a press conference, and basically kind of put it on him and said, "You're not playing up to snuff," is essentially what he said in front of a lot of media. And Najee Harris responds, right? 20 carries, 99 yards. Doesn't get much, doesn't get the scoring opportunities. But I think that this could be one, again, if this offense is kind of swimming upstream, we've talked about this, and with the fact that Ben's not there to throw checkdowns behind the line of scrimmage on like fourth and seven, like he was doing last year when to Najee Harris. Najee Harris is hurt by the lack of touchdowns, right? 3.6 expected touchdowns. He's only got one. He's got 19 red zone carries. That's 14th in the league. He ranks 46th in points per snaps. Their points per snap, that's not good. Again, he's 19th in expected points per game, and he's performing 3 points under expectation. So situation's not great. His performance relative to the situation isn't great, but hopefully some of that stuff can maybe rebound here down the stretch. Maybe Pickett could start playing a little bit better. San Francisco, they've got McCaffrey ahead of Mitchell, even though they rode Mitchell this past week. Mitchell looked really good, I thought, in his return to San Francisco from IR. Again, still holding TDP. I don't know how long that's going to feel great, but I'm still holding him at present. Houston, Damian Pierce. Again, we talked about how the reliable volume of Jamal Williams. Basically that for Damian Pierce, one of the better one of the more clarified injury away situations in the league is Rex Burkhead being behind him. So I don't think the offense is that good, but Burkhead can play both in the passing game and in the running game. So he'd be an option there. If Pierce went down, you could spot start Rex Burkhead. We've seen that. I got perfect concept of that. The Giants, I'm actually going to move them up to a medium because I have pretty good confidence that this is Matt Breida. I have pretty good confidence that this offense is moving and wants to run the ball. And I think they would continue to do so even if Saquon Barkley was injured. 35 carries this past week. Really, really good usage there. So I am in on... I am in on Burkhead in a lot of spots as being an injury away guy. Breida in a bunch of spots being an injury away guy. Atlanta, Cordarrelle Patterson returns. This is a little bit confusing, would sort of be the thought. There is some notes here that PFF has in terms of the snap breakdowns that I think gives you a little bit of an indication. So if you look, the short yardage work this past week went to Tyler Allgeier, just one carry. The two-minute drill, Avery Williams came in and did basically half of that, essentially, would be the best description of it. He had 8 snaps to 9 for Tyler Allgeier and 2 for Cordarrelle Patterson. So just about a little bit less than half of the work there. But that's basically all of the snaps that he had. He had 1 early down snap as well. The third down work is a split between Cordarrelle Patterson and Allgeier. The early down work is a split with Cordarrelle Patterson basically having like a third of it. So it's a bit of a muddled mess there. It ultimately boils down to 21 snaps by himself on the field for Tyler Allgeier and 15 for Cordarrelle Patterson. But some of that, the two-minute drill, for example, I think could influence that. In a game where they have a little bit better game script, I think you could see a game where Cordarrelle Patterson gets more work and more opportunity. He's kind of their preferred option early on in early downs. Just doesn't see a ton of just didn't see a ton of it in this game. Last but not least, certainly not least, Deonta Foreman for Carolina. Chuba Hubbard's the backup. I think that one's pretty clear to me at this point. And Foreman, we're riding out right now. If you want to get like a second plus, something like that, I'm interested. There's a chance he's the starter next year. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possible that happens. So, I would be hesitant to sell for anything less than, some sort of maybe a mid second or a little bit higher second, something like that, I wouldn't sell for a third. I can definitely, absolutely assure you I wouldn't sell for a third. So he's played well enough to warrant at least injury away status someplace else. That the trading currency for that is a second round rookie pick. If not, hold on to him, right? And so that would sort of be my thought. And there's a chance that he actually bumps up to be an actual, like, he could win the starting job there next year. It wouldn't shock me. So I would hold on to him for anything less than like a mid to early second round rookie pick. All right, that's going to do it here for this edition. So a rundown here. I got just in 30 minutes, so less than a minute per depth chart. Not bad when you consider I went like 47 minutes on tight ends or 43, something like that. So that'll do it for this edition. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.